Live and Lansing with Michael Cohen. This is More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
You are listening to 1320 WILS. I'm Michael Cohen. Thank you for joining us. While our post-9/11 world has brought a lot of attention to Islam, it has not necessarily led to a better understanding of the religion and how Muslims view their faith. That's something that Muhammad Khalil, an assistant professor of religious studies at Michigan State University, tries to shed some light on in his new book, Islam and the Fate of Others, The Salvation Question. Muhammad joins us now. Thank you so much for coming on the program this evening.
Thank you, Michael.
So this is a first-of-its-kind look at how Muslims view non-Muslims. Sometimes they've been referred to as infidels, which obviously indicates a less than favorable viewpoint. But what did you discover in your research of this book?
Well, what I found was that medieval scholars who were living in the heartland of the Muslim world, often had a much more optimistic view of the afterlife and perhaps a more tolerant understanding or conception of salvation than the figures that we hear about in the news today.
Well, you know, when we talk about the afterlife, we certainly hear a lot about martyrs and this belief of having virgins in the afterlife and so on. I mean, what is the standard belief of the afterlife for any Muslim and for non-Muslims also by Muslims?
Well, in general, you're going to have different responses from different Muslims with regard to the afterlife. Some take the descriptions of the afterlife very literally. Others take them to be metaphors, to be approximations. So you'll have different responses. I think ultimately, though, the one thing that Muslims generally agree on is that heaven is for those who have earned God's pleasure. And so there's a general agreement on that, that there are those who will be content and those who will not be. Of course, there, as I found out in my own research, there's actually a lot of debate about whether hell, whether the punishment in hell goes on forever or whether it comes to an end and people eventually all go to paradise, hell serving as a kind of purgatory. So there's some interesting debates there. So you'll find a lot of disagreement. But where they agree, it's just really the basics, that heaven is good, hell is bad.
So are you saying that most Muslim scholars do in fact believe that non-believers, those who are not Muslim, will go to heaven?
Well, they're not necessarily pluralists in the way that we think of pluralists today. In other words, they're still, medieval scholars generally still affirm that Islam is authentic and perhaps more complete than other traditions. They do certainly prefer Islam, but with regard to non-Muslims, their general view is that, well, God is merciful. And so sincere non-Muslims who, for some scholars, they're a bit more conservative, so they'll say, well, non-Muslims who didn't really encounter Islam, only those non-Muslims would be excused. Others would say, well, no, if they don't find it convincing, then they're excused. And both groups, the thing that separates them from some of these modern folks is that both groups would say, well, ultimately, we don't know. God knows best. There's a lot of ambiguity there and a lot of uncertainty. And that's very different, I think, from what you see today, where people very confidently assert that non-Muslims are infidels who are bound for everlasting damnation.
Yeah, what really shocks people, though, when it comes to these afterlife beliefs are suicide bombers, the fact that they can be indoctrinated with this belief that by, you know, walking into a crowd, blowing themselves up is going to lead to them going to this heaven of a sort. I mean, how does that play into what the Islam religion actually talks about?
Well, the suicide bombing phenomenon is rather complex, and I think that it would be a mistake to view it as purely religious or purely political. I think you have to see the two coming together. Of course, Muslims did not invent suicide bombing. When I was born in the 70s, there was no such thing as a Muslim suicide bomber. But in any case, the idea of, you know, killing innocent civilians and so on, I mean, historically, Muslim scholars of law, the jurists, they would often put restrictions on who could or could not be harmed during war. They had rules of war, the concept of just war that you find in other traditions. There was a concept of just war in Islam. And often what they agreed on is that you don't harm innocent civilians. They would debate occasionally special cases where, for example, an enemy uses somebody as a human shield. There were these debates that came up, but generally speaking, the basic principle was you don't harm innocent civilians. And I think that's why these recent episodes that we keep hearing about again and again of Muslim suicide bombers is so tragic and so devastating, because most Muslims, when you look at Gallup poll, the most comprehensive poll that we've seen so far by Gallup a couple of years ago, showed that Muslims really do not, most Muslims do not approve of this. They reject this.
Now,
and in fact, the scholars.
I guess I want to ask you, in religious context, because now that, we're done with the war in Iraq, we are still seeing these continuous suicide bombings in Iraq. Muslims basically suicide bombing among other Muslims. I mean, on a religious context, I mean, how is that explained exactly?
Well, the way their view is that this is their only way of fighting, that they can't fight a just war on a battlefield. This is their only way of fighting. And their assumption is that, I'm a hero now. I'm giving up my life for a cause. It's kind of like, when you watch, even in other cultures, you have this idea of giving up your life for a cause. So they see it as something noble. Of course, what many people miss is that many of the scholars of Islamic law don't necessarily agree. In fact, many scholars of law would say that there's absolutely no basis for this logic, that, this is their only way and that this is justified. I think what you have essentially is a kind of ends justify the means approach. And I think that's really what's quite disturbing about all this.
I'm talking to Muhammad Khalil, an assistant professor of religious studies at Michigan State University. His new book, Islam and the Fate of Others, The Salvation Question. I want to ask you about Sharia. As you know, there have been proposals here in Michigan, and other states have in fact passed what are called anti-Sharia laws. Essentially, the concern is that Islam is both a religion and a civil structure it involves a whole philosophy of legal crime and punishment. How would you explain Sharia, and how would you explain how it fits into the life of Muslims?
Well, there's a great misconception about the term Sharia, because for Muslims, Sharia means the law as God would want it, the ideal law. And that means that if you're a believing Muslim, you love Sharia. The question is, how do you interpret Sharia? And I think this is the great misconception, is that people assume that Sharia is one thing. In fact, you will find Muslims, and I know Muslims personally, who think that Saudi law is not conservative enough. And I personally know Muslims who think Dutch law is not liberal enough. And both are Muslims who claim to love Sharia. So the problem, I think, with the discourse today is that Sharia is taken to be one thing, as if you can pull out one book that, everything you need to know about Sharia. Actually, Muslim scholars have long agreed to disagree about all kinds of issues. And actually, what Muslims today disagree on are often those things that make the headlines. And if I might just add, this recent discussion about Sharia in the U.S., I think here again there are some problems there, because for most Muslims, Sharia is really more of a personal thing. Now, are there Muslims who would like to have Sharia conquer? Absolutely. You're going to find all kinds of Muslims who would like to see Islam as the law of the land, just as you have Christian Reconstructionists here in the U.S. who would like to see Christian values dominate. But for your average Muslim, Sharia does not entail all the things that we hear about. In fact, if you look at the Muslim world, look at the number of countries that practice those, that have the very disturbing practices that we hear about all the time. Really, that's for the majority of Muslim countries do not practice stoning like you see in Saudi Arabia and other countries where it's practiced very freely. Most even traditional scholars would say, well, these were often meant to be more theoretical punishments, not something you actually practice.
And I guess it's just a matter of interpretation, as so many things are. One last thing, the U.S. obviously at war with Al-Qaeda, which looks to be fairly effective now as we're taking out their leaders as each new one emerges. Is that viewed in a positive way by moderate Muslims, this removal of these more extreme and violent Muslims?
Certainly by many, yes. I think one thing that's very interesting is that when Osama bin Laden was killed, you didn't really see, Muslims all over the world, protesting. And, I mean, people were too consumed with the Arab Spring and other things that are going on. There were some Muslims who were upset, obviously, but clearly you didn't see any massive movement. And 1 year after his death, you don't see anything, really. There's this assumption that bin Laden was a hero for a lot of people, and he was, but he not to the extent that people made it out to be. I think the problem is that many Muslims were not happy with either bin Laden or the United States. And so the result is that people were rather ambivalent regarding both. And I think that's why you don't find people so enthusiastically supporting the U.S. and not really enthusiastically supporting bin Laden.
Unfortunately, about a minute left, but I do want to ask you this question. Hopefully we can kind of get a synopsis of it. This idea that there's this battle, ongoing battle between Judeo-Christian culture and Islam, that it may take generations even, and it is ongoing. What is your view on that, and do you think there's any reason to think otherwise?
I think having been raised in this country, raised as a Muslim, surrounded by Christians, Jews, and atheists and others, to my mind, this will only happen if people want it to happen. I think this clash of civilizations discourse is in many ways a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I think that if we choose to take another route, then that's the route we will take. I think if we recognize that we're more similar than we are different, then I think we'll be in good shape.
Mohammed Khalil, an assistant professor of religious studies at Michigan State University. His new book, Islam and the Fate of Others, The Salvation Question. Mohammed, I'll certainly want to have you on the program again.
Thank you so much, Michael.